This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hello, hellbound infidels. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist, Dan Barker. This is June the 15th, 2013, Free Thought Radio broadcast around the country in such states as Missouri, New York, California, Michigan, and of course we podcast everywhere.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we have two purposes. We represent the views of those of us who are personally free from religion, and we work to keep the U.S. government free from religion, which is what is required under our secular and godless constitution.
Today, with that in mind, we're going to talk about a 50-year-old victorious lawsuit and a 3-day-old lawsuit, which is just started, which is in progress, both involving religion in the public schools.
This upcoming Monday, June 17th, is the 50th anniversary of the historic Abington Town School District versus Shemp Supreme Court decision barring Bible reading and devotions in public schools. And today we have the very great pleasure of talking again to Ellery Shemp himself, the high schooler who started this constitutional decision by complaining about the religious ceremonies and rituals at his school, and whose family took that case all the way to the highest court.
Now, he's not a high schooler anymore.
It's
been 50 years. And then in a few minutes, we'll also talk about the Freedom From Religion Foundation's newest federal lawsuit filed this week, also involving religion in the schools. We'll be speaking with FFRF attorney Andrew Seidel, who will be joining us in the studio today.
Andrew is joining us in a minute, but right now we want to talk for a second about discrimination against atheists and nonbelievers in Congress. And while there are plenty of foxhole atheists, the religionists on the U.S. House Armed Services Committee made sure 2 weeks ago none would be allowed to serve as secular representatives in the chaplain corps. On June 5th, a Democrat from New Jersey, Representative Rob Andrews, very kindly offered an amendment to the 2014 National Defense Authorization Act that would have permitted persons certified by non-theist groups to join the chaplain corps to provide guidance to, quote, members of the armed forces who are atheist, agnostic, or belong to no organized faith group. And can we get a hallelujah there that we're being noticed?
Are there some of them in the military?
And the idea was to help members of the military who don't believe in a God but want someone to talk to about problems or concerns without having to seek a medical professional. And this amendment, which was killed in the committee, brought a flood of invective and abuse of the non-religious by some of the Republican members.
You can't use the word chaplain with atheists because they don't believe anything. They don't believe in a faith. They don't believe it. So since I can't imagine an atheist accompanying a notification team as they go into some family's home to let them have the worst news of their life, and this guy say, you know, that's it. Your son's just worms. I mean, worm food. And so this is, I disagree.
That's Representative Mike Conaway, a Republican from where else? A Republican from Texas. And now another one echoing his sentiments is Representative John Fleming, another Republican from Louisiana.
Last thing in the world we would want to see is a young soldier who may be dying, and they're at a field hospital, and a chaplain is standing over that person saying to them, if you die here, there's no hope for you in the future.
But kudos to Representative Adam Smith, a Democrat from Washington, who defended atheists and humanists and referenced atheists in a foxhole, Pat Tillman, the NFL star who was killed by, quote-unquote, friendly fire in Afghanistan in 2004. This is Adam Smith.
I mean, to say that an atheist or a humanist doesn't believe anything is just ignorant. There are many, many of them serving in the military, including Pat Tillman. Now, the response to the gentleman's amendment makes me feel all the more the necessity of it. So basically, if you are an atheist or a humanist in the military's response is, we got nothing for you. There's no hope for you. They believe in a system of values. And that system of values is worth as much to them as our Christianity is to us.
Now, let's hear the vote.
The question is on the adoption of the amendment offered by Mr. Andrews. So many as are in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Did you hear that? No. It's almost like we don't want those people in our midst. Almost a quarter of the military identify as atheist, agnostic, or having no religious preference. That's based on a 2010 MAFF study based on Department of Defense data. As a captive audience in the military, many are increasingly subjected to proselytizing, not only by Christian chaplains with a sense of entitlement, but by superior officers who confuse patriotism with piety, and they abuse their rank to promote religion.
And just this week, because of that disgusting display, I'm very pleased to say that Representative Polis, a Democrat from Colorado, did introduce Amendment 295 to the 2014 National Defense Authorization Act that was on the floor to certify non-religious officers. I can't tell you what happened as this is being recorded, but we do have a few promoters of the rights of seculars in the military.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Andrew Seidel about a brand new federal lawsuit taken by FFRF. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. In a few minutes, we're going to talk with Ellery Shemp about the 50th anniversary of the historic Supreme Court Shemp decision involving religion in the schools. But first, we have a new lawsuit of our own involving religion in the schools that was just filed this week, and we have in the studio with us our FFRF attorney, Andrew Seidel, and you are the person who drafted the complaint. But Andrew, I know I was in your office, and you and Chuck, the intern, were laughing about something. Before we talk about the lawsuit, what were you guys laughing about?
We were laughing at a little clip on the internet by Brian Fisher, who's kind of a right-wing evangelical with a microphone, and he delved into science, which is not a good place for evangelical believers to go.
You know, one of the age-old questions of science is what keeps the nucleus together? Remember, the nucleus consists of a bundle of protons and neutrons. Now, protons have a positive charge. What do positive charges do? They repel each other. There ought to be no way you can keep them together. And scientists have pondered since they first understood the makeup of the atom, what is it that holds the nucleus of the atom together? They've been looking for what scientists call the nuclear glue that keeps them from flying apart. Well, now we know. Now we know what the glue is that holds together the entire universe. It is Jesus Christ. In him, all things hold together.
He was quoting 1 Thessalonians 5, I think, in Christ all things hold together, quoting from the NIV, the New International Version of the Bible.
Which prominently features in our new lawsuit.
Now, we just filed this on Thursday, thanks to pro bono attorneys.
Jerry Jeffrey and Steve Brady down in Florida are really helping us out a lot with this. They've been instrumental in getting it moving forward and also helped with some of the negotiations at the very beginning.
And the principal plaintiff is David Williamson, who directs our new chapter there.
David has been wonderful. So he's the organizer for the Central Florida Free Thought community, and they've just been absolutely great in getting this whole thing planned.
But as among the victims of the censored literature, Dan and I are also very honored to be plaintiffs.
And authors of the censored material, yeah.
And we interviewed one of the students a few weeks ago, Daniel Koster, who was in the schools distributing free thought literature.
And Robert Price, who was also another censored author.
That's right, yeah.
Why don't you set this up? What's our new... Our lawsuit is a little bit different than the typical FFRF federal lawsuit.
Sure. So this is actually new for us because this is not an Establishment Clause lawsuit, which is typically we're arguing that the government has aligned itself with religion. In this case, we're actually arguing that our free speech rights were violated and that we were discriminated against under the Equal Protection Clause. So basically what happened is Orange County Public Schools decided to allow a Bible distribution in their schools. And our local chapter and a number of students contacted us and said, is this okay? We obviously said, no, we can protest it. We sent a couple letters to the school district and we said, you know, you shouldn't be allowing outside groups to distribute anything in your schools, particularly Bibles. And that's been our stance from the beginning. We've reiterated this to the school district throughout and they continue to, keep this forum open. But so they allowed the Bibles to be distributed.
Now, this was, excuse me for interrupting, but this was a so-called passive distribution.
Yes. So this is kind of an important aspect. A passive distribution is essentially you put up a table, you throw your books on the table, and then people can come by and pick it up or not. Now, one interesting thing about the lawsuit and part of the equal protection claim is that they enforced those passive distribution rules against our volunteers, but they didn't against the World Changers of Florida volunteers, and that's the group that was distributing the Bibles. So World Changers of Florida had adults manning the tables to pass out the Bibles. They had interactive whiteboards up that said, what's your favorite part of the Bible? Schools even brought their little golf carts to the cars of the World Changers of Florida, helped them unload the books, and then drive them to the table. So there was all this material support and no passive distribution enforced against World
Changers.
They were
talking to students?
Yeah, we have
in some schools,
and we have photos of these too. So there's not going to be much of a dispute on this.
So, well, I mean, you've explained it that we did. David did organize this major kind of literature drop in about 11 schools in the Orlando area. So why are we suing?
Because most of our literature was prohibited. So it's actually interesting. You know, we kind of say, well, if I were to say we asked to distribute 8 books and 8 non-tracts and an essay and a few brochures, that sounds like an awful lot of material. But all but one of our books was completely prohibited. Half of our non-tracts were prohibited. And the Robert Ingersoll essay, The Truth, was prohibited.
And we should explain what a non-tract is, I think.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know this, a non-tract is the opposite of a tract. It's a small little pamphlet. You know, if you were to type it out on regular size paper, it'd be maybe a page. Well,
it's about 6,000 words.
600.
It's more than that.
It's a tiny,
it's
little
tiny print,
four-fold,
but yeah, it's not very long.
Fits in your back pocket thing. Half of those were prohibited. And the reason
we published those, FFRF has dubbed the term non-tract.
Absolutely.
To offer something to somebody when you get those doorbells ringing and people trying to give you religious literature.
Tracts for non-believers.
Yeah.
And we have heard from a lot of our members who do hand this out to, you know, the Jehovah's Witness come and say, here's some literature. And they say, well, here's some literature for you too, which is kind of what was going on in the schools. But I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, the Bible is not one book. The Bible is, depending on your religion, 66 books. And it's, depending on which version, it's 780,000 words. So it's far more voluminous than all the materials we wanted to distribute put together. And then after all the prohibitions that the school district imposed on us, you know, almost all of our books, with the exception of one part of Thomas Paine's book, The Rights of Man, were prohibited. So we got to, most of our message was completely disallowed by the school.
The truth was censored. Ingersoll.
Absolutely. And
the lovely part of this story is that there was quite a smoking gun. And why don't you tell us about that?
So the reasons that the school district gave for prohibiting the materials are the great part of this lawsuit. So, for instance, the best example, I think, for our listeners to understand is Robert Price's book, Jesus is Dead. The school district prohibited that because the claim that Jesus was not crucified or resurrected is age inappropriate for high school students. Now, remember, the Bible was obviously allowed to be distributed, and it claims that Jesus was crucified and resurrected. So permitting one viewpoint, that the resurrection and crucifixion occurred, and prohibiting the other viewpoint that they did not occur is unconstitutional. And, I mean, the Supreme Court has been very clear about this. They say that the government may not regulate speech based on the message it conveys. So that's probably the best example, but there
But this is from
many,
a
many
memo
more.
Or a letter to us
yes.
telling us why they were kind of a priori going to be censoring us.
Absolutely. And they laid out all the books that they censored. They laid out the reasons for them. For instance, one of the non-tracks, I think you wrote this one, Dan, it's called Why Jesus. They prohibited that because they alleged that it will cause a substantial distribution because it
disruption.
Oh, yeah. Disruption. Excuse me. Because it argues that Jesus did not promote equality and social justice, was not compassionate, was not reliable, and was not a good example.
So the school's taking a position, a theological position.
Absolutely. And the most interesting thing about that one is that you don't necessarily take that position. You ask a question, and then you back all you put below the question is Bible sites.
So they censored Bible verses.
They censored Bible verses. And they also prohibited Sam Harris's best-selling book, Letter to a Christian Nation. This one was kind of a ridiculous reason to censor it. They put a number of them. Among them, they said that there were age-inappropriate concepts, such as describing the sacrifice of virgins, killing and eating of children, and feeding infants to sharks. Now, each of these has direct parallels in the Bible. Which,
sharks in the Bible?
Which we point out in our complaint, yeah. So the book of Judges, chapter 11, describes how, I'm not sure how you say his name, Jephthah. Sacrificed his virgin daughter to the Lord in return for helping him plunder 20 Ammonite
His towns. Nameless daughter, I might add, one of the many nameless victim women in the Bible.
Yep. Cannibalism of children frequently occurs in the Bible. Leviticus 26:29, you will eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters. Deuteronomy 28:53, you will eat the fruit of the womb. And so the Bible technically doesn't record any instances of feeding children to sharks, although Jonah does get eaten by a large fish. No digestion actually occurs. But the political or the biblical deity does feed children to bears. So this is in 2 Kings, Elijah, who's this balding biblical prophet. He called down a curse in the name of the Lord on children who mocked his receding hairline, and two bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 boys.
Like 42 kids couldn't run away from they couldn't run away from two bears, but
and this is great. I mean, God is actually murdering children in the Bible
for
right
teasing
there.
Simply for teasing a man for being bald.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. There's a lot of other great examples of this viewpoint discrimination. Probably the most ironic was a book that was prohibited because the district's administration will not permit the distribution of materials insulting religions. Hmm. Now, the Bible...
But religions can insult non-believers.
Absolutely, which the Bible does. So Psalm 14:1, the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, their deeds are evil, and there is no one who does good.
There's not one that does good.
Yep.
No atheist can be good.
Yep, 2 John chapter 1, do not acknowledge Jesus Christ. If you do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh, you are the deceiver and the antichrist. But it's actually worse than just making fun of people. The Bible actually mandates death for people
execution for blasphemy.
Well, that's age appropriate, I think.
Well, I mean, let's look at it. Let's look at Deuteronomy 13. It's fantastic. If your own brother or your son or daughter or the wife you love or your closest friend secretly entices you saying, let us go and worship other gods, show them no pity. Do not spare them or shield them. You must certainly put them to death. Your hand must be the first in putting them to death. Stone them to death because they tried to turn you away from the Lord your God.
Now, we should explain that you are reading from the NIV interpretation of the Bible, and why would that be?
Because that is the interpretation of the Bible that the World Changers of Florida distributed in the schools.
The translation. Yeah.
Exactly.
But it's a very biased, slanted, evangelical translation with the purpose of bringing people to Christ.
And there is actually an introduction and then kind of a postscript in the Bible that was distributed that explains the translation. It was written by the committee who did the translation, and it specifically says it's to help convert people to Christianity.
Now, Andrew, we should make it clear that all along, I think it's from January or February, you've been negotiating on behalf of our chapter in David Williamson with the Orange County School District in Florida, trying to get somewhere with this, and you also drafted the very wonderful legal complaint that you can read online at ffrf.org/legal if you go to ongoing lawsuits. Did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun, actually.
And then you'll stay around
sure.
while we interview a historic victor, Ellery Shemp, celebrating the 50th anniversary of one of the most important Supreme Court decisions on religion in the schools ever.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm FFRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel.
Ellery Schimpf began protesting morning devotions when he was a 16-year-old junior in Abington Senior High in Pennsylvania in 1956. The law then required 10 verses of the Bible to be read in every class at the beginning of each day, followed by students standing to recite the Lord's Prayer and then the flag salute. 20 to 30 states had similar laws, and we're going to talk with Ellery today and let him tell you what happened. Professor Stephen Solomon at New York University has documented the landmark case in the book Ellery's Protest, published by the University of Michigan Press. Ellery, who went on to have a distinguished career in science, attended Tufts, where he graduated cum laude in physics and geology, earned a Ph.D. at Brown in physics, worked on fiber optics research, joined the staff of Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and worked on the development of MRI systems. Ellery Schimpf is a member of the American Physical Society. He's authored and co-authored many articles in professional journals. He's traveled a lot. He's a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. He was named a champion of the First Amendment by the foundation in 2007. He's an accomplished speaker. You'll hear his melodious voice in a minute. He often talks on college campuses to make sure that students today know why it's so important to keep religion out of public schools and government programs. So, Ellery, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Dan, it's always a great pleasure to be talking with you.
And, of course, Ellery, we got you at the last minute to celebrate a major accomplishment, which is on Monday, the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court decision that your family won in 1963. So I know I speak for Dan and for Andrew here. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Andrew, Laurie. The case is actually known as Abington versus Schimpf and Murray versus Curlett, so I sometimes want to mention that Madeline Murray was also an important figure in bringing this case.
Now, before we talk more about it, I met your dad, Ed, a few years ago. He and your mom, of course, were involved with the lawsuit. And the case was 50 years ago, but about 25 years ago, we interviewed your dad. And let's just listen to a little bit of your dad talking 25 years ago about your case.
He came home one day telling us that he felt that the use of religion in the schools as practiced in Abington was patently illegal. And he as much as told us, what are you going to do about it? Ellery took it up with the ACLU, of which I was a member, and that began a six-year term, which ended in 1963 with a Supreme Court decision that called prayer and Bible reading in the public schools illegal. Meanwhile, Ellery was doing his own protesting in school. He took a copy of the Quran in, and when the other children were reading the Bible, he read the Quran. When they were supposed to stand, he sat down. This, of course, did not endear him to the school authorities. They did, however, allow him to leave the room, but this was hardly any remedy because the PA system blared all over the school in hallways and so forth. He was allowed to go down to the homeroom teacher or down to the principal's office while these ceremonies, and they called them Bible reading ceremonies. There was no question that this was a religious exercise. That's what the whole case amounted to, is the fact that this was a religious exercise accomplished with the help of the public school authorities. The students are a captive audience, and to make one particular religion the state-sponsored religion is very unfair and completely against our Constitution. We think our case kept up the proudest of that tradition of separation of church and state.
And that was Ed Schemp, Ellery's dad, a clip from FFRF's 1989 film, Champions of the First Amendment, that you can catch on FFRF's YouTube channel. And Ellery, I think you were in Antarctica or something.
Marvelous to hear my dad's words again.
Yes.
He's passed on, and and it's just lovely.
Yes, it is. And I think you were traveling. We tried to film you at the time, and you've never been to Antarctica, have you?
Actually have been to Antarctica.
I think maybe that's where you were.
I've been within 800 miles of the South Pole and within 400 miles of the North Pole. I've had a wonderful life.
And anyway, so you weren't in the film, but we're so glad to have you on the radio today. And we've had you talk about it before, but, you know, what was it like to be the young man in the middle of all of that?
Well, it wasn't nearly as significant or leading to martyrdom as people might expect. I had the support of the ACLU. That was absolutely essential because they had a lawyer who spent more than a year pro bono doing research and figuring out the best way to present the case. But the overall reaction of the community, of course, was not all that happy. We got about 5,000 letters, and about one-third of them were supporting, actually, and one-third were reasonable, and one-third were simply hateful. And but it was very interesting. I thought that when we got these letters that said, "What are you, Jews? What are you, commies?" or whatever, that was very nasty. And then the letters that said, "What are you, Methodist?" We didn't expect those. The funny thing was that, or the sad thing, I guess, was that when it was very bad to be not a Christian, it was very bad not to be very bad to be a communist. But the letters indicated that when they thought we were atheists, that was the greatest outrage that they could imagine.
And I can't remember what I should have looked it up. What was the vote in your winning decision?
It was an 8-1 decision.
8-1. Who was the holdout?
That was Potter Stewart.
Oh.
But it was marvelous because, I mean, we hear it today all about 5-4
right.
decisions all the time. An 8-1 decision. The most conservative judges on the court all agreed in the minority, and there were justices who are from a Catholic and a Protestant and a Jewish tradition all agreed with the decision.
And who wrote the decision again?
Oh, that was Tom Clark.
Tom Clark. Vashti McCollum's was 8-1 too.
And her yes, yes.
And
to put this in perspective, I mean, the Abington case wasn't a standalone. There was the McCollum case in 1948, the Everson case in 1947 was slightly different, but that was very important because it applied the 14th Amendment to the First Amendment. But then in 1962, there was the Engel versus
the Tully
decision. There was the Abington decision, and many other decisions that have come since then, Weissman, for example, and others about graduation prayers and school football coaches and other cases. So the Abington case and Engel cases, Weissman, represented a foundation that has protected children for their religious beliefs ever since.
Well, and that legacy is very useful. I mean, we write letters every single day to FFRF's legal staff, and we cite those cases, and Schemp in particular, in almost every one of those letters. And if it's going to a school, definitely we cite it. So it's hard to underestimate the impact and that legacy.
Oh, thank you. And that really is wonderful that many of these issues no longer have to go to court. You write them a stern letter and say you're going to lose if you keep going this way. So that's a great thing.
And I have to say, Andrew's one of four staff attorneys, and our first staff attorney, Rebecca Market, who's not in the studio today, orienting our interns for the summer about the work of FFRF, she always, when she's talking about these cases, she says, this is one of the few places you're going to work where we know the people who won these cases, or at least some of us know these Supreme Court champions of the First Amendment. And so you're very, you're legends in your own time around our office.
Oh, that's marvelous. And I just want to applaud what FFRF does. They're certainly guardians of the separation of church and state, and you guys do a wonderful job.
Of course, none of this would have happened if it weren't for some brave high school student in the 1950s saying, enough is enough. I'm going to complain about what's happening. It must have been tougher back then than it is today to stand up and complain when atheists...
Oh, you have to think back, many of our audience might not have been born back then, but in 1956, for example, that was only 2 years after the Congress added under God to the Pledge of Allegiance, and that rather annoyed me. I didn't think that was necessary. I sometimes quip that we're actually not a nation under God. If you look at a map, we're actually under Canada.
Good line.
The other line is that we're a nation undereducated.
Yeah, that too.
Now, we are going to take a break, and we are talking with a legend in his own time, Ellery Shemp, about the 50th anniversary this Monday of Shemp, of Abington versus Shemp, 1963 decision against Bible reading and the Lord's Prayer in public schools, still precedent today. I'm with...
And I'm Dan Barker.
And I'm Andrew Seidel.
And we'll be right back to talk more with Ellery Shemp.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
FRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel.
And we are talking with Ellery Shemp, congratulating him and celebrating the 50th anniversary of Abington versus Shemp, the very important 1963 Supreme Court decision saying you can't have the Lord's Prayer and Bible reading in our public schools. And welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Ellery.
Thank you.
And during the break, we were talking about the fact that Engle versus Vitale was against a school written prayer, 62. Your case came down in 63. Very firm decisions. Don't you think that probably the Supreme Court thought that they had taken care of the problem, and look where we are today?
Well, I'm very fond of a quote from the Engle decision. It is no part of the business of government to be composing prayers. Well, I think that we have to enlarge that. It is no part of the business of government to having prayers at school meetings and school board meetings and city councils. We have to think about this issue. Is prayer and religious piety, displays of public piety, any part of the business of government? I think that's a very powerful phrase.
Yeah,
and we need to say that, Ellery, you just agreed to speak at our 36th annual convention in the Freedom From Religion Foundation's meeting in Madison, Wisconsin, the last weekend in September. And you will be there, and Jim McCollum will be there representing the 65th anniversary of the McCollum ruling, the very first case against religion in the public schools. So there's a lot of history and a lot of celebrating going on this year.
Yes, it is. And also to put things in perspective, okay, so 1963 was important for separation of church and state, but we also have to remember that that was the year that Medgar Evers was killed. That was the year that the Birmingham school children were bombed. That was the year that President Kennedy was assassinated. So there were lots of other important social matters, but I'm very happy that I played a small role in establishing a principle of separation of church and state that has endured.
Is there anything you're doing on Monday? Is there any big celebration planned?
No, I'm going to be down in Washington. I'll be visiting our friends at American Humanists, at Americans United, ACLU, and whatever.
Well, good.
We have a photograph that is running Free Thought today of you with Jessica Alquist, a high schooler from Rhode Island. The photo that Andrew Seidel took, right?
I actually took that at the Reason Rally. I love that photo. You know, it's the beginning of the tradition and the latest crop in the tradition.
Send that to me. I don't know that I've got this one.
Absolutely, I can do that.
Well, does that give you hope, Ellery, that the younger generation is continuing on?
Absolutely. I see younger folks in high school and colleges rejecting conventional beliefs and being more open to values and ethics of humanism and non-belief. Our friends at the Secular Student Alliance are doing a marvelous work. So I think that's very important that younger people come to understand this this history, and I'm very pleased that many of them, I mean, maybe a third of college students entering now put down none as their religious preference.
Yeah, that's so the latest statistic is 32% of people under the age of 30 have no religion.
Yes, and I think that's a very powerful and wonderful development, so that we are more expanding in our social understandings. We now accept gays and gay marriage. We accept atheists and non-believers, and I think this is a positive step for the country.
Now, Ellery, I wonder if you have an opinion on this, you know, living through the 63 decision and kind of being a lightning rod and speaking on college campuses today. When we see this statistic that a third of young people are non-religious and 20% of adults are non-religious, but maybe back in 63, only 2 or 5% were. Do you think that that's true, or do you think there were just an awful lot of people in the closet?
Well, there were a lot of people in the closet, but I think also that societal values and understandings have enlarged. You know, people come to now to actually meet atheists who are out of the closet, and it turns out they don't have horns and a tail, and they're very decent and upstanding members of the community, and they have values and ethical values that that are wholly admirable. So you don't need religion in order to be a good person in this country.
Now, we are almost running out of time, but you are also a very powerful and passionate speaker about the need to keep religion out of government and a promoter of secularism. Do you want to say something about your current concerns?
Well, I'm very concerned about the Catholic Church's position that would impose their religious doctrines on the rest of society in terms of contraception and abortion. I think it's very important to recognize that religious leaders don't take an oath of office for the to support the Constitution. They have their own agenda, and they are very worried about the losing power and influence, and for that matter, their income. So I think there's an old guard that's important to recognize. They have an enormous amount of money. The televangelists bring in hundreds of millions of dollars every year. So I think the humanist, non-theist community is at a disadvantage. But I think we have the power of our ideas, and I think those ideas are winning.
And I think that politicians have not caught up with, you know, if the Catholics are the first, the largest denomination, the non-religious is the second largest, quote-unquote, denomination in the country at 20%. Catholics at 24%.
That's a very good point, Andy Laurie.
Well, and the difference is that we're not hypocrites about it.
That's an important point, too.
But here we are facing the Catholic...
The church leaders talking about morality, the only thing they're worried about is sex. They're not worried at least about the disparate income between CEOs and the average working guy.
And you were talking about the Catholic Church and its campaign against the contraceptive mandate. And here in the state of Wisconsin, of course, we're facing this in a bill that we don't know if we can stop, so that on the basis of religion, any employer could refuse contraceptive coverage and insurance policies for their women employees. And all of these lawsuits all around the country. So I think that's what you were referring to. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
And it's... very scary. We've been not only having to fight for abortion rights, but now we're having to fight for contraception all over again.
And if I can just throw in, too, the Supreme Court settled this issue back in the 1800s in Reynolds versus U.S. They said that if we allow a religious exemption for everything, every man will become a law unto himself. And that was talking
That's a wonderful
polygamy.
Quote. I wish we could please send me the reference. I think that's wonderful.
That's the Mormon polygamy case. And they said you can't claim to have multiple wives because your religion says so.
Yeah, and we, I mean, I actually don't believe in freedom of religion, except in, you can believe anything. You can believe in pixies and leprechauns, whatever you like, but you don't have the right to have a prayer meeting in the middle of a freeway. You don't have the right to have animal sacrifices on an altar. You don't have the right to starve your children to death, as happened here in Attleboro, Massachusetts, because you have some religious notion. I mean, so freedom of religion is not in any sense absolute.
Freedom of religious conscience, but practice is a different matter.
Yes, good point. Yeah.
So now your parents are dead, but they must have been terribly proud of you and proud of this decision to know it goes on. Don't you have a sister, too?
I have a sister and a brother. My brother is very supportive, and he lives in New Jersey and is a member of a Unitarian church. My sister lives in California, and she's been a bit reluctant because she felt a lot of mortification while this case was starting off when she was just a 12- or 13-year-old girl.
Well, you're speaking out, so that's fine. But it was a great decision. It's a great anniversary, and we're all indebted to you and your family for enduring what you did do. And I think you've minimized a bit of the problems that you had when you took this case. And so thank you so much, Ellery Shemp.
And I want to thank the ACLU that made this all possible.
Yes.
This is Ellery Shemp of the Abington versus Shemp Supreme Court decision, the 50th anniversary Monday. We also want to thank Dave McCann, who is our producer and engineer. We want to thank Andrew Seidel for joining us in studio today and for taking a lot of our legal work. We produce this show in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio to learn more.
Sign up at ffrf.org. You can go to our events link to sign up for the convention to meet Ellery Shemp in person. You can phone 1-800-335-4021, ask for more information, ask for a sample copy of Free Thought Today, which is our monthly newspaper, 24 pages with a lot more information. And tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday